Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, this is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Claire Zofko, who is deeply involved in many different parts of the sports law world. She teaches in the sports law program with ISDEE, that's the Instituto Superior de Derecho en Economía, at Columbia University. She practices international sports law. She teaches a class about the globalization of sport at the University of Miami, and she's the founder of Sports Law Chat, a bi-weekly Twitter chat that is well known for being a good place to spark discussion within the sports law community. I'm glad she's taken time out of her day to speak with me today. To start off, Claire, can you introduce yourself so we can better get to know you?
Sure. Thank you for having me this morning. So I'm from Seattle originally and went to college back there at Pacific Lutheran University, where I was a collegiate athlete. And after that period of my life ended, I wanted to still be involved in sport. So I looked for a way to combine sport and my work, or sport and academics. So I continued my education and moved to Miami to attend University of Miami Law School. And while I was in law school, I would get involved in any way I could to learn more and get more experience in the sports business industry. So I, as a student, started working in the compliance department at UM in athletics, and then also started working as a summer intern with the NBA Seattle Supersonics at that time. So started to get my feet wet on the collegiate level and on the professional level to learn the two industries that then kind of prepared me for many opportunities that I got involved in later. I would say that by getting my law degree, it helped me get involved in the industry on the business side and in the front office.
Okay, so you got a lot of different sports experiences early on. You got the law degree as well to help you gain a different perspective. And it's clear from your history as well that you're dedicated to furthering sports law education. Why do you think that is important?
For me, I've just really always loved learning. And, you know, when I learn these things or am exposed to new things in the industry, I also particularly love sharing them too. Things have kind of just worked out how they have, and these teaching opportunities have continued to arise for me. And to be able to share the experiences I've had and apply the theoretical theories in this area, I find it really fascinating. And even though I teach, I truly just consider myself a lifelong student, and I'm always looking for more opportunities to learn and gain more experience.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, that's great. Sounds like you've learned a lot, and you're sharing that with other people as well. Some people, notably Mark Cuban, among others, have said that a student shouldn't focus on studying sports law or sports business when they're gaining an education. He says that these kind of, whether it's a major or a focus, they're too narrow, and that students should just instead study broader subjects like general law or general business management and then apply that to sports if they want to work in the sports industry. What do you think about the idea that focusing on sports in your educational pursuits is limiting, is career-wise or otherwise?
In my opinion, I respectfully disagree with Mr. Cuban on this one. From the exposure I've had and what I've learned is that sports law or sports business is not really a niche. It's huge. It's ever-growing. It's continuing to grow and continuing to get global as well. So even if you say you're studying sports law or working in sports law, that could mean hundreds of different things. Within sports law, there's many niches. So I would say maybe right off the gate, not focusing on a particular niche, but just getting that broader education of what exactly is sports law. And in the end, it does have components of all these basic areas of law, contract law, alternative dispute resolution, antitrust, labor law, and the list goes on and on. So I think by just studying sports law or sports business, it's not limiting. It's actually opening up doors for niches you maybe realize you enjoy or have a passion for or have some type of link to, and that could open up doors for your future career.
Yeah, and I think that's true. Just from my, I recently graduated from law school, and in my experience, the law school that I attended didn't have a sports law program or anything like that, but there were classes, and I took them because of an interest, and there's so many different things as far as antitrust and labor law and you know, intellectual property and things like that. It's really sports law is the applied law of all these different disciplines put together. And that's just the law side. I'm sure with business as well, there's a whole lot of different things that go into that. So it's kind of more an application rather than just a narrow subset of skills.
Exactly. And often when it comes to the sports industry, the way these concepts are applied is slightly different, or there's a unique way that it applies within sport. So I think if someone has an interest to work in the area, it's important to study the area as a whole to know those differences and how it would apply in sports.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, thanks for sharing your perspective about that. You are involved with this international program, Ease Day. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what exactly that entails?
Sure. Yeah, we're an institution from Madrid, Spain, a law school back in Madrid. And for the last 4 years, or this is our fourth year now, we have educational programs in the United States. So this is our fourth year. And then this year, we just started a brand new partnership with Columbia University, the School of Continuing Education. And we currently have a companion degree program where students are able to get their master's in global sports law at the same time as their master's in sports management from Columbia. So the students can get 2 degrees at one time, have the on-site experience in New York City, be exposed to many of the top practitioners in this area, and get this joint or this companion degree. So it's been a pleasure to be involved with Ease Day, and I teach a couple of courses within the program.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, that sounds interesting and then kind of a unique experience as far as learning about global sports goes. And I believe that goes pretty well into our planned discussion about the globalization of sport. So we hear this term, global sports, globalization of sports. What does that term, the globalization of sport, mean to you?
The beginning of the globalization of sport is that right now where we're at in this day and age, teams, leagues, players, sponsors, companies, and any other stakeholders are going across borders. And once they move across borders and go international, how do you balance the tension between keeping your product, event, team, sport local and have the local characteristics that it has with the tension of needing to maybe adapt it in certain ways to the new market you're moving into. So it kind of encompasses a lot, but basically it's, when we talk about the globalization of sport, it's this interplay between the local, regional, national, of whatever the product or sport or practice is, and now how does it adapt and change and grow in an international market.
Okay. And, you know, we hear about globalization in the broader world as well. Do you feel like this is a recent phenomenon, having the globalization of sport, or is it something that, you know, dates back to ancient Greece with the ancient Olympics and things like that? How do you see that?
I would probably say that it's not definitely a recent phenomenon, but now we're just being able to view it more with the prevalence of social media and the more information we have out there and with broadcasting and access to sport at this time in this period. But I'd say the globalization of sport, in my opinion, would have started when the modern Olympics resumed. So like in 1896, when at that point we have numerous countries coming to one location for one global mega event and the growth from there. You know, now it's over 100 plus years later, and now we're seeing not only the Olympics being a mega event, we have the World Cup right behind. We have many other major sports that have their world championships. We have individual sports that the organizational structure of their sport is to be international and to have competitions, each competition in a different locale. Then we have in the United States national professional leagues that have this desire to play across borders and everything that that entails.
Yeah, it does seem to be something that touches every aspect of sports. I think when some people hear that term, maybe they think, oh, international sports, that means the Olympics or something like that. But really, you know, whether it's an individual league that has teams in different countries or even if all the teams are, say, only in the U.S., other countries are interested in these games. We have the NFL going to Europe and things like that. And so it's a big issue right now, obviously. So what challenges or opportunities does this globalization of sport provide?
There's a lot. I'd say first with the opportunities, if you're a stakeholder in this industry and you're seeking to go across borders, you know, the first thing is it's a new market. So if your current market seems stagnant or maybe declining, there's an opportunity. If you go to a new market, you're going to have more eyeballs. You're going to have more potential sponsorship deals available. You're going to have the ability to build your brand further. You're going to have the ability to set up in a new locale. Depending on the partnerships you create, there could be an opportunity to expand the resources you have. That might mean human resources. That might mean on the athlete level, That might mean on the technological level, the infrastructure level, et cetera. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities related to growth of your brand, depending on whatever it is and what level of sport you are. Then on the challenges side, the challenges exponentially grow. So as you take an event across borders or a team, whatever it may be, now you're going to be in a new market. So in that new market, it's going to be completely different. So you're going to have to look at what's the culture of that market. What is the political issues related to the market? What is the legal system in that market? You know, time zone issues come into play. Language issues could come into play. And the list just really continues to go on. So when stakeholders are making these decisions to go across borders, it's important to take the time up front to really think about these things. And that if you are going to make such an investment to move across borders, will you get a return on investment? So it might sound great to, oh, let's have our team play a game in Brazil. That sounds great. But really, what's the financial impact of that? And, you know, remembering in the end, as much as sports is entertainment, in the end, it's a business. So, you know, are these proper business decisions to move across borders? And what type of return on investment could you get back for your brand if you do move across borders?
Okay, right. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, anytime you have organized sports, there's going to be a lot of moving pieces to organize and to get together. And then adding the international aspect potentially just adds more, perhaps, opportunities, but also challenges. And both of those opportunities and challenges provide opportunities for people to work and to learn and to get things done. And so I think a lot of people are recognizing in this global marketplace, there's career opportunities, there's things that people can do. What do you think are some ways that people who are interested in a career in global sports can do to get involved?
So a couple things I would say. First, there are, like ESTE's program, there's programs that are available to study this industry. And I know there's various other schools that have degrees and I feel like every time I kind of check around, more degrees in management coming up and they're having an international perspective on some level. So that's great for the development of this area. And then also one of the biggest tools that I've found for me is Twitter. I think Twitter is fantastic that it's 24 hours a day and you have access to people globally. So the first step if someone's new to Twitter is to go on Twitter and find those people that work for those companies or teams or leagues that you're interested in and follow them and see what are they talking about. What are the issues they're talking about? I think the first step to get in this area is to know what are the issues? You know, what is this all about? So to get in the conversation and educate yourself or start to learn about this industry because it's big and it's expansive and you can't know it all, but at least by getting out there and kind of reading and networking and interacting with the people in the industry, you'll get your feet wet on what exactly this industry is.
Yeah, and I think that's just like really any kind of career path. You first have to understand the marketplace and get an understanding of how things work. You know, you want to network, you want to gain education, whether it's through a program like ESTE or something else, and then, yeah, put yourself in a situation where you have opportunities. So there's certainly a lot out there. You just kind of have to get informed and then pursue what you're interested in.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I think this has been a great discussion. It's been really interesting to me to learn a little bit more about this international sporting world. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to leave us with on the topic?
I would just say what I've found successful in my career in this area is to plant seeds and to plant seeds because you just want to do whatever you're wanting to do, not with like an end goal of needing something the moment you plant a seed, but meet people, get involved, go to the event, read the books, etc., just to gain that knowledge. And then kind of when you're least expecting it, something blooms and some opportunity works out. But the more seeds you can have out there, probability that something's going to work out. So many of the professional opportunities that have evolved for me came from, you know, some seed at some point where I connected with someone and then I followed up and I cultivated that relationship. And then, you know, eventually there was an opportunity there. So get your feet wet, get out there. And if this is really an industry you're interested in, it definitely takes time, but it's a possibility. And there's more and more possibilities every day in this area as sport continues to globalize.
Okay, well, great. Yeah, thanks for leaving us with those thoughts and for taking the time to speak with us today on the Sports Lobbyist Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This has been an episode of the Sports Lobbyist Podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Lobbyist website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo, as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is at Lieb Montoya in both places. That's at L-I-B Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, at PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, at SportsLawBiz, or through email at SportsLawBizBlog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.